This is Sarah from The Journey, and welcome to another expert special. Now, today we are going to be tackling something that many people go through at some point in their lifetime, but especially vulnerable to it when we're going through the journey from conception to pregnancy and post. So, today we're speaking to Holly Rubin, who is a psychotherapist with over a decade and a half of experience. She actually specializes in body image. She's worked for the government. She's a public speaker and she has her own practice. So we had a really interesting discussion about the shame that can be associated with that and really some practical tips to deal with it. So without further ado, over to Holly. Hi, Holly. Thank you so much for joining us.
It is a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So let's kick off with just a little bit about you. How did you come into being a specialist on body image?
Well, it's a good question. So it began quite early for me for several experiences that I had personally. And one was actually began when I was very young, 5.5 years old. And I had an accident which left me with a scar in the corner of my mouth. And as a 5.5 year old, when there was a physical change to my appearance, how that affected me and what happened consequently. And I had to wear a splint in my mouth, which drew attention to something that was different. And kids can be mean. And that was really, really hard for me. So that was something that had happened that I didn't process, obviously, at that time. But it was the first experience where I had something happen firsthand. I think from there, it probably had me look at life in a little bit of a different way. I had a very, very close friend as well whose mother struggled with cancer growing up. And this was a very beautiful woman who she just was gorgeous, and a lot of what happened to her physically as she was going through her cancer and her cancer treatment was she really began to, as the cancer sort of ate at her internally, externally, her appearance of course changed as well. And that relationship between how she felt about herself and how she portrayed herself too were very interlinked clearly at that time. And that was really hard to watch as a young adolescent going through my own changes. I think that affected me quite, it impacted me quite a lot as well at that time. And then it just seems that a lot of my experiences were all woven together in some way. Body image was attached to that. I worked as my first internship, I was doing my degree in psychology at McGill University in Montreal, where I'm from, and I worked at the Montreal General Hospital on a gender unit, and it was around clients who were wanting to have sex reassignment surgery at the time is what we called it, and these were individuals who were feeling very uncomfortable, it would be known as trans now, very uncomfortable in their own bodies. And part of that process that they needed to go through, I sat as part of a team, and there was psychiatrist and social worker and psychologists all working on these cases around whether to grant sex reassignment surgery or not. And that was really fascinating. It was watching people struggling with where they were, both in terms of their gender identity, as well as just physically what was happening to them. They really felt that they were in the wrong bodies. And what was so important as well was that part of the rule about getting into this program was that they were needing to be there for a year. And they needed to do so. They needed to live as though they were living in the other person's body. It took time. And that time was really, really important. It showed me that you can't make these decisions quickly, and that that gender is a complex construct, and that really that time gave people a chance to determine whether in fact they did want to have that surgery or not. And it really played on me in terms of how important it is to take the time to go through and go through these struggles and questions sometimes, and we don't have to this happens for all of us, right? We all go through things at different times in our lives as well. And there are pivotal times. There are times of adolescence or times of physical changes or pregnancy. All of these times in our lives and our normal development bring up questions for us around who am I now that I look different? And that's really been the core of the work that I've done.
That's so interesting. And as you say, it happens to everybody. I mean, and you sum it up really well. I think it starts even from a really, really young age when children start to be conscious that they look different to another, to maybe the rest of their classmates, or, you know, they might have different colored skin or they might be a different size. And then that goes all the way through adolescence as our bodies change. And then, of course, in the things that we're focusing on when it comes to trying to get pregnant. So lots of people now in this society want to be size zero, and that ends up completely killing your periods and your fertility. Mm. So people struggle with that. But then similarly, lots of the anxiety that's around there and about these days can cause people to have a problem with having a BMI, which is too high to conceive. And then, of course, you go through pregnancy and then postpartum. Now, obviously, this is something that's happened through life over centuries, but do you think that our modern society, as it is now, with this connection, with the internet, with Instagram, I mean, are you, you know, we all talk about it, but are you seeing like a real difference in terms of, you know, it having a proper impact on the people who you see? And also, interesting point that you make is about greater acceptance of gender reassignment and that becoming a much more kind of, socially accepted thing. Do you think that this is having an impact, all these changes in society, on the people that you see?
I think there's definitely more acceptance, right, for difference. I do think that this definition of beauty, luckily and thankfully, is widening. So this notion of what we consider to be beautiful, where it was a very, very narrow definition, even just 5-7 years ago, has expanded. And we are in a space right now where diversity is being acknowledged and difference is tolerated more so. Are we there yet? Have we arrived? No. But there has been enlightenment, and there is this idea that it's okay to look different and to be different. Not easy, and we have our struggles in getting there, but I do think that we are getting there slowly. In terms of what we're seeing, and whether there's a greater acceptance, I think, again, by seeing more, even looking at the models or looking at, you know, acknowledging that there is beauty in difference, that in itself is helping with acceptance, right? We have to realize that viewpoint has to be, we have to see that on a greater spectrum. And we are, I believe we are.
So do you think the kind of youngest generation that are growing up today, do you think we're almost in like a better position now because some of the very youngest children now are in a different world in terms of we are learning that people are different and to accept that difference? I mean, obviously, this is like a really big challenge as a parent, is like, how do you instill in your kids that it's actually a good thing to be different and to support other people's differences? And how do you, and I guess the flip side is, you know, there is Snapchat and Instagram and TikTok, which I just recently learned about. And it's, we are still a very visual society. So how do you, how would you approach kind of the very youngest people in society? How, as a parent, do you think is a good way to start from the very earliest stage, mm-hmm. instilling a positive kind of viewpoint on body image into kids? Because obviously you yourself, as a 5-year-old, had an experience.
Yeah.
And I guess knowing what you do now from not only a clinical perspective, but from your own experience, how, as kind of parents listening, do you think we should approach this?
Again, such a good question. And really have to acknowledge that it's nuanced, isn't it? There's so many layers to these questions. But I think to begin with,
The age piece is very important. So these messages begin very early on. They begin even earlier than five. That 0 to 5 point is really an important time in a little one's life and in the relationship between mother and child at that time. And I say mother because I will say parent. I will say parent, I will say nanny, I will say anyone who has that primary relationship, because it doesn't have to be mother. The messaging is really important in that how we translate that, how we talk about bodies, how we talk about appearance, how we talk about food is going to be what we might think if we make a flippant comment, for example, such as, you know, you can be getting dressed for an evening out and you can turn in the mirror, you can say to a partner, oh gosh, you know, does my bum look big in this? For us, it might very well be an innocuous sort of, you know, off the cuff comment. But if we think about how a little one hears that and takes that on and how they integrate that information is, wait, I don't think mummy's bottom looks big in that. I think mummy's beautiful. And if she begins to question her own beauty, well, what does that mean? What does it mean to be an adult? Does that mean that that's how I'm going to feel about myself? All of this gets taken in a way that we, if we knew and we understood, we probably wouldn't do, right? Because we would want to be really conscious about the messaging that we're giving our next, you know, the next generation, which is that what you look like is absolutely wonderful and it's perfect, and what you look like isn't the only thing that we're going to address. We're going to address who you are as an individual and the what lies beneath. So that's always the goal. But let's go back to the messaging, because if we're talking about in pregnancy, it actually, how we feel about our bodies in pregnancy very much is comes through even in those very, very early stages. The way that our bodies change and how we accommodate for those changes has a big impact in how we transmit that information even in the womb. So I actually wrote a paper on this with my mentor and colleague Susie Orbach. We were commissioned by the Equalities Party at that time, which was Jo Swinson, I will say, and she got a group together called an APPG group on body image. And in that group, we were then commissioned to write a paper, and we wrote the paper called 2 for 1. And it was about pregnancy and how body image during pregnancy and beyond, and how women feel about their changing bodies will very much depend on how they carry themselves throughout the pregnancy and afterwards. So that messaging, to your point, really starts very early.
Wow, that's so fascinating. I actually didn't know that at all, that even during pregnancy matters, although it makes complete sense. And actually, we'll put a link on the show notes to your paper, because it sounds like a really fascinating read. I do think it's also really key what you were saying, that even, you know, once a child has been born, from the very earliest days, how we behave as parents matters. I think maybe it's becoming a much more appreciated now, but the old school way of thinking is that until a child can kind of like really speak and hold a conversation, the child doesn't understand. And clearly we now know that's absolutely not the case. But as you say, you know, some women do really struggle with how their body's changing. And actually, I guess it can potentially come down to like a lack of control. You know, we're so used to these days, you know, working out and eating in a very specific way, and everyone wants to be super, super healthy. And when you become pregnant, you can feel somewhat out of control, which can leave people feeling very anxious and then ironically then guilty for feeling that way. So given what you know, if someone who is pregnant and struggling with the same thing is listening, what would be your kind of advice about how to kind of rationalize this and deal with this mentally in the best way?
Such a good question, and again, really happy that it's being raised, because again, you know, when I was having my children 17, 14, and 12 years ago, this wasn't common conversation. It really wasn't, and I think it would have really helped a lot of women going through this, because I will always say that every mother going into this journey is doing so because she wants it to be as positive as it possibly can. No mother goes into this job with the intention of, you know, making mistakes and hurting the next generation. That's just by no place that we stand from. So I think it's really important to remember that and to always come back to this fact that everybody's really just trying to do their best, and it's a hard job, and there's no manual that goes with it.
Wish there was.
I know. So that being said, how to help, I guess, is...
Do you think it's the way that we speak to ourselves? Because you kind of were making reference to the fact that, you know, when we're, as parents of very young kids, you know, we could be even looking in the mirror, and because we're thinking, you know, we're looking in the mirror and we're thinking X, Y, and Z, a negative thought about ourselves, then that transmits. And I guess it's what you were saying about pregnancy itself. If you're having these negative thoughts, so is how would you get hold of that kind of negative voice in your head?
So I think a lot of it, again, beginning with the awareness and the fact, acknowledging the fact that you are having these thoughts, with, you know, and trying really hard to not beat oneself up about it and to say, okay, you know, I'm not feeling great about what I look today. I'm in a different part of my trimester maybe, or I've, you know, the sleep is really, lack of sleep is getting to me. But there are reasons, again, why hormonally our bodies are just changing so drastically, physiologically, physically, all of it's happening all at once. And it's a time where you need to be more gentle with yourself. And I think that's really difficult because it's such a time of transition, right? And I think if you're used to being a certain size, seeing yourself a certain way, being able to have mobility that perhaps, you know, the pregnancy is making it harder to have, all of those are going to impact how you see yourself and how, and consequently also how you feel about yourself. Now, to deny that or to berate yourself for that is only giving you more, just a better chance of having a more difficult time. So I would say that the first step really needs to be around giving yourself, giving yourself permission to actually feel whatever it is you're feeling, and to not berate yourself for feeling it, and to just accept that, you know, that it's okay. That it doesn't, every moment of your pregnancy does not need to be blissful. And I think the messaging is really dangerous, the societal messaging around being pregnant and what that, you know, what are the connotations? Blooming and lovely and floral and all these ideas of what it means to be pregnant. There are those, but we also need to see the other side of it, which is it's not, you don't wake up every single morning feeling fantastic. You are confronted with certain challenges about your appearance that you might not have had prior. And that's okay.
I remember when I was pregnant and I was following these kind of people on Instagram, you know, because that's just what you do. And I was always seeing these images of these girls, and they would just look phenomenally when they're pregnant. And I'm like, oh my God, I look like an absolute mess. So in terms of like practical things to do and things that you give your clients to do, does meditation help? Is it editing what you see? How would you practically approach this?
I think to your point of Instagram, right? I think, and this is pregnant, not pregnant, this is adolescent, this is 50-year-old, it runs the gamut. I think it's really, can be quite toxic and quite dangerous to put yourself in a situation where you're constantly looking only at the appearance piece, right? Because you don't have the opportunity to really understand the backstory. We know that about Instagram, right? That it's that highlight reel and it's physical and it's bombardment of imagery. But what we don't know is what lies behind, right? So some of those celebrities who we're seeing, perhaps we don't know how many hours it took for them to get into it is what they're wearing, or the personal trainers that perhaps they have, and the makeup and the hair and all of that. That's not necessarily how the normal person, the regular person, is living. And so it's really, it puts you on the back foot, especially at a time during pregnancy where one tends to be more vulnerable, not only about how they look, but about how they feel. So yes, being able to take some time out, being able to become more aware of these feelings that we're having, which may not be rosy and joyful, the shadow side of this, the fact that it's difficult, to be able to see that and have that and feel that, and then to be able to let go of that as well, to not hold on to it.
So I guess is it maybe even taking the first step is from listening to what you're saying is take an inventory of kind of what's making you feel good and what's making you not feel good, and being honest with yourself. I guess as you keep saying, it's about awareness of yourself and honesty with yourself in a way.
Yeah, and awareness again, it's really the best place to begin, because and it's difficult, but it really is needing to take a look at who you are and an opportunity actually to be able to understand yourself better. I don't think there's a better gift than the gift of beginning to really understand yourself and know yourself. And that's the process of therapy, and that's what I love so much about what I do. But genuinely to begin to see yourself, warts and all. And if you take that risk, and it's not easy, it's hard work, but you're certainly not seeing that when you're looking at one-dimensional visuals all the time, right? Mm. We're not taking the time to actually hear your journey or understand the struggles that it might be posing. That takes time, and that takes vulnerability and a relationship often with which to be able to process some of those feelings that we don't get the chance to do in our push button sort of culture that we're living in.
Mm. It's definitely challenging, that's for sure. The other thing that I sometimes hear is that when people are going through pregnancy, it can change the dynamic with their partner, and they can often end up feeling quite unattractive, and it is another additional layer of pressure on them. So, I mean, how do you deal with that? Because obviously, you know, when we can rationally say, oh, of course, that's crazy to think like that, because, you know, you're growing a child, your body's going to change, you look gorgeous, you know, I have these conversations with friends of mine, but that doesn't help sometimes, you know, when someone's feeling, you know, unattractive, and then it can make people feel extra vulnerable. So is there any ways that you can kind of approach it in terms of how you feel with relation to your partner, or how you build your confidence, I guess, when you're going through those changes? I guess that's really what it comes down to.
And again, I think a lot of this is about communication, and it's about being able to have that conversation with your partner enough to say, you know what, I'm really struggling here. I'm not feeling great about how I look, or I'm feeling really different, or I'm not sure what's going on with me, really. So it's about being able to open up a conversation and to be curious enough to also to listen, because a lot of the time, this is how we might be experiencing ourselves. So we might bring that up to a partner, and the partner might look at us and say, I don't see any of what you're talking about. You look beautiful, or I'm so enjoying this pregnancy, or I'm enjoying how you are in it, or I think you look great. Whatever it is, that sharing that and opening that up can very much put a different spin or a different perspective on how it is you're feeling. Now that need not discount how you're feeling, right? But just the very nature of bringing it up and sharing that is a relieving factor that helps. But also to listen to that and to sometimes say, hang on, is this me? Or is this, you know, am I worrying about what somebody else is thinking about me? Or is this really how I'm feeling about myself? And if it's how I'm feeling about myself, it's about taking the time to, going back to what we were saying before, is just being permissive and being more gentle, really, with the changes that you're going through. Mm-hmm. I think what's really important is also, we're talking about physical changes, but it's worthwhile defining what body image means. And what it means is it's not how we look, it's how we feel about how we look. So once we bring in feel, we're talking about subjectivity, we're talking about emotions, right? We cannot talk ourselves out of them. We cannot rationalize. I mean, we can, but to be able to be honest with that is to be able to say, this is, you know, I'm really having a hard time here. And that's okay, that knowing that we will get through that and it will change and shift. But I think it's important to define that, because it's so much of it is about how other people perceive us. But really, it's about how we perceive ourselves that matters at the end of the day.
So I guess it comes back to that absolute basis of awareness of how you're feeling and understanding why you're feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And then I guess, as you say, having the confidence to be open with that, and actually opening up those conversations might change the perspective a little bit of how we're feeling. I think it's a really good point. And often, you know, we get into this rut in our heads where we're going over and over and we're internalizing it, which can often just make it a whole lot worse.
Yeah.
And I suppose this applies to postpartum as well. You know, I guess this is something that's a little bit more talked about. And I certainly feel that there's a bit of a backlash against, you know, the celebrities that have a baby and literally like 2 weeks later, they're like a size six and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It's still kind of weirdly celebrated in a way, but like it seems to make the press, and it always has one absolute guaranteed outcome, which is to make people feel rubbish about themselves. But it is out there, and it is something that, you know, some people do struggle with, is this postpartum, because not only has your body changed a lot, but your body's going through a lot with breastfeeding, and the hormonal shifts that go on are obviously massive. And it is certainly a more spoken about thing. But I mean, how would you best approach the kind of immediate postpartum? And when I say immediate, I mean really the kind of first 6 months can be a real, you know, emotional, physical roller coaster. And it's a time that many, many women struggle with. So what would be your kind of best advice and way to approach this?
Well, I agree with you. And the celebrity culture and this idea that, you know, the goal is to just fit right back into those skinny jeans of yours, that, as much as we know now intellectually that that's not necessarily, shouldn't be the goal, that is still what many people are wanting, right? And what they're wanting is really not so much about the genes, there is that, but I believe, again, at a deeper level, it is this transitional time, or a very scary time, where you're venturing into a whole new world, and you have a child with whom, you know, there's so much pressure in terms of getting it all right, right? How do I breastfeed this properly? I'm being told that this is the way to do it, and what if I don't want to do it that way, or if I'm having difficulty? There is so much pressure on the new mother. And so I do believe the genes is a piece of it, but underneath it...
It's a
symptom of it, and underneath all of it is about what we're talking about and addressing, but not saying so much, is about identity.
Mm.
It's about this shift. It's about, how do I go from being who I am and I've always known myself to be, both physically in my body and emotionally and spiritually, all of a sudden I'm mom. And I got, you know, I was noticed for being pregnant before, now all of a sudden the baby's not here, is here. And the focus becomes on the baby as well. So there's very natural for mom to feel a part of that, disconnected from that. And really what needs to happen in those 6 months, in that beginning, is that the opportunity for the bonding to begin to happen. And if you as the new mother are focusing so much on yourself and this desire to get back to who I was, right, who you were, then that focus on bonding and on connecting and on attachment with your baby is not paramount, and it needs to be paramount. So not as a pressure, right, but as a really, really important time in a mother and baby's life is to have that bonding. But it's going to be really, really hard to do if you as a mother is so focused only on maintaining that identity and who I was prior to being a mom.
So it's almost, again, another kind of relinquishing of control in a way, is that in fact what you should be doing is just shelving that part and prioritizing this bonding time as much as you can.
Yeah,
I mean, it's tricky.
Yeah, and shoulds are so hard, and I really try to banish that word because it just puts more pressure and it reinforces. So I really hate that word, to be honest. It's so hard because we're constantly being told, you know, societal pressure and parental or wherever it's coming from, that you should, a mother means you should be doing this.
Yeah.
Well, you shouldn't. You should be doing whatever it is that you're going through. Okay, so if we can remove that judgment a little bit, I think that helps too. But this idea of clinging to what's familiar, you're right, we're calling it control, and we do need to acknowledge that, that it's, life feels very out of control and it feels very chaotic in those early days, and that's exactly what it's meant to be like.
So I guess it's almost acceptance again of this kind of change. So instead of fighting it, it's actually just relinquishing control and acceptance and actually trying to relax into it, which is
so hard to
do.
And so easy to say, you know, 17 and 14 years post, but it is a very, very stressful time, those early days. And it's really, you know, young mothers are grappling for help and for feedback and for trying to figure out how to do all this. And what feels right in those early days are just listening to other people who are in your care, you know, who are meant to be helping you. And it's a very challenging time because you need the help and you want the help and you don't yet know what works for you. And you're being told to, that, you know, do what works for you, but you don't know yet and you can't know yet. So it's really uncharted territory. And so, of course, what's going to feel best is to go to what you know. But this is a time where you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And I guess to have support around you who can allow you to be in that very uncertain time with you, without you feeling the pressure, which again is so much easier said than done, it would really be something that I would advise. You know, get a group around you who can nourish you and help you through those early times and days.
I guess that's like what you were saying before, it's this communication, and I guess it's having the kind of bravery in a way to be vulnerable and to communicate with people who are maybe in a similar position. And so would you say that perhaps the best thing to do is to kind of actually physically connect with people who are in the similar situation, which is, I guess, where things like NCT classes come into their own, because you connect with people who are going through your exact same thing. So instead of turning to the internet and looking at images and feeling like absolute rubbish, it's actually about making kind of proper connections and communicating and being honest with how you're feeling and accepting that.
And I'm such a dinosaur, and I would say yes to all of that, because again, my belief is that there's definitely a place for online forums and for Facebook groups and chats and all of that. And I realize that that's a real source of support for many, especially in those early days when you can't get out. We do have access to all of that technology now that we didn't really have quite the same way when I had young, really young ones. So I do see a place for it. But if you're asking me what the best way in terms of helping, getting real support, I would say is that live in vivo conversation and being able to look at people and being able to really empathize with other people's journey of which you're really going side by side with them. I think there's something that exists in a moment when you're with somebody in person that sometimes we can shy away from behind a screen. Now, I know a lot of people would disagree with me, and I've had these kinds of conversations where, you know, the idea is that behind a screen, people do feel much more comfortable with sharing and talking. I see that and understand that. But again, I'm sort of looking at it from an opportunity to shy away from some of this really difficult stuff that we are going through and have to face. I mean, on the tail end of that paper that I wrote with Susie Orbach for the government, out of that came a pilot program where we trained NCT practitioners. The practitioners themselves, what we wanted them to learn was how women were feeling about their bodies postpartum, and that how that intergenerational transmission of body image, okay, that fancy word, which really what it means is how we feel about our bodies, how that gets translated to our babies, i.e. if we're anxious or we're having difficulty feeding, that physical anxiety will get transferred, right? So what we wanted to do was train these practitioners and them getting to grips with how actually they felt about themselves so that they could better understand their new mothers. To really be able to empathize, one really needs to also see how they feel about themselves and be honest also, even if it would have been 10, 15 years, to try to remember what it feels like for new mothers. So that training program was, again, in-person training. And we were offered do e-trainings and do this. But again, we both kind of came from the place of, you know, to get this, to get to the core of it, it's about being together. And that's not just about being together socially with other mothers. It's about learning to be together with your baby. What does that mean? How does it really play out when you're looking eye to eye with your child? And because that's where the bonding comes in. It's the eye to eye contact. It's a smile that's, you know, given, and a baby to be mirroring, and all of that's really important, and you can't get that through a screen.
Well, you know, it's funny, a lot of the stuff that we've done previously around anxiety, not only in adults but in very, very young children, all comes down to this fact that we think we're being so sociable and we think we're communicating a lot, but actually over the last few generations it's increasingly happening on screens and via all these tools that have a very useful part to play in some ways, but actually can weirdly make us feel much more lonely. I always think it's a bit like eating a Big Mac. Like, you feel like super full for about a minute, and then about 10 minutes later you feel starving again and really empty. And I think, you know, there's been a lot of publicity about things like Mumsnet and certain mothers' chat forums where actually a lot of like toxicity and bullying goes on. Like, there was a big thing with a mum influencer the other day. And, you know, whilst, as you say, there is a time and a place for them and they can be really useful, they can also be like massive sources of anxiety in themselves, and they can be very judgmental and they can actually have the reverse effect. And I think that can be quite dangerous as well.
Absolutely. And to your point about communication, in fact, we are communicating, but we're not connecting. And that's where the loneliness comes in, okay? Because we think we're doing all this stuff and we're liking and we're looking and we're scrolling. But to your point, you know, that Big Mac, that after that, you're not left satisfied. You're left full, but you're not left satisfied. And those are two very, very different things. So I think it's important, again, to be mindful around what is going to feel satisfying, what is going to feel real.
And I suppose that's going to be different depending on the individual, but I guess it comes back to what you've been saying the whole time. It's like being honest with yourself about what's making you feel good and what's within your realms of possibility to connect. But I think, I guess the point you're making is that there is nothing more valuable than, like, as you say, it's not just communicating, it's connecting with people. And especially important when you're feeling most vulnerable. But sometimes the irony is when you are feeling most vulnerable, it's the time that you're least likely to kind of take that step and connect.
Definitely.
And that can be such a challenge. I mean, when a client of yours might say that they're struggling with this, like, what do you say to them? How do you encourage somebody or give someone the tools in order to kind of take that first step? Because I can totally see what you're saying, that all these things make quite a lot of sense. But sometimes when you're in a bit of a hole, especially in these early days, it can be quite hard to kind of make that leap and make that first step. And I'm sure once you do it, you feel so much better. But it's getting to that point. It's having that confidence.
I think it's knowing that you're not alone in these things. And I think more conversations like this, and I think what you've done is great by creating what the journey and what you have done to establish a platform where people can hear about what other people are going through so that they don't feel so isolated. I think that's really important. And to, yes, have the courage to be able to say, I'm having a hard time here. And that I'm, instead of sweeping it under the carpet and instead of, you know, pretending it's not really there, I'm going to be a little bit more brave around it, and I'm going to take a step and I'm going to get myself some help. And sometimes it helps people to feel a little bit less guilty, because I've heard it all. It's indulgent. It's not necessary. It's too expensive. I mean, you know, again, and I appreciate the cultural difference here. In North America, therapy is a lot more accepted than it has been in the UK, but I've lived here 18 years, so I've lived that and I've watched that change, and I'm proud to be part of a change that's happening now here and it, more of an acceptance. But the idea of having help is okay, and that it's brave and it's hard and it's difficult, but I'll say it again, you know, it, to be able to know yourself is really priceless.
And I think it's accepting, as you say, that and it's that it's okay not to be perfect. It's okay to be struggling. And in fact, more than that, it's normal.
It's normal.
And I think that's the thing, because we've been bombarded with these images of perfection. It's not just Instagram. I mean, for times before that, it was all the images in magazines. It was all the kind of like things on TV. It's all this kind of aspirational thing. And but I think it's just so not normal. And I guess getting that message out that actually what's far more normal is to feel completely discombobulated. And it is normal not to feel like a million bucks. And it's normal to struggle, and being open about that. And I suppose, weirdly enough, the more you're open, you might actually be helping someone else as well.
Definitely. You're helping somebody else by acknowledging that, helping yourself simultaneously. And you're also, if we're talking about the next generation, we're also, by getting more comfortable with feelings and negative feelings, we're allowing and enabling conversation to be there with our children, okay? As opposed to, oh, got to shield him or her from all this emotion if it's not positive. I believe that being honest with that allows, because children are just honest with how they feel, right? That is how they operate. So to close off from that actually teaches a child that it's not okay to have that range of emotion, because if they're not, they don't have that permission to do that, then it's harder for them too. So sometimes it makes parents feel that, like, if I'm getting that help and I'm learning how to communicate, well, not only am I doing it for myself, I'm doing it for my family as well. And that somehow lets some people let go of some of the guilt attached to it. If we have to look at it that way, don't just look at it about yourself, look at it about how much you're giving to the people around you by getting yourself sorted.
So I think it's really interesting, the point that you just made about how we kind of interact with our kids, because I think there is this kind of culture as well, especially in the kind of Western world, you know, you have this like tiger parent thing, and in the UK and the US especially, you know, we want to give our kids this perfect childhood, but actually, ironically, it kind of somewhat doesn't really prepare them for how life really is. And but I know every parent, no matter what, wants to give them their kid the absolute best experience. But so do you think kind of this emotional honesty and being open is actually, you know, with the highs and the lows, is preparing them better, maybe?
Absolutely. Yeah, well summarized. So yes, I do think so. It's a very competitive game, new parenthood, and it starts from the minute you, probably when you're beginning to conceive, huh? Think about all the competition that exists around everything from conceiving to, you know, how many children you have, to where they're going to school, to, it is so hard on new parents, especially today, I think in a different way than it was in our parents' generation. So if we're talking about the new, you know, the next generation, yes, it's about being able to manage all the pressure that's going to be, that they're going to have to endure as well in this, you know, you mentioned everything being perfect. Well, perfectionism around parenting and around raising children is very pressureful.
Yeah, and it's like, if we kind of shield our kids and we only give them all the positive things, then it's absolutely not going to prepare them for that.
Yeah.
So having a kind of honest relationship with our feelings with ourselves, but also showing that to our kids, mm-hmm. you think is an important way to go. And then in terms of educating our kids that, you know, because we all live in a bubble of our society, no matter what, you know, they all look different, but they're all individual bubbles. Now, how do we kind of best approach differences with our kids from the youngest stage? So obviously, everyone is different from you. But how do you, raise them in a way that they not only celebrate other people's differences, but they also celebrate how they are as an individual? And again, trying to steer them away from this, how you look, but it's about how you feel. Because I do still think that, and maybe it'll change in the next 10, 15 years, but it is still very visual, you know, mm-hmm. our society. So how do we approach that as parents to be?
I think that, you know, first of all, everybody's normal is different. I think that is, you know, something that I say all the time, that everyone's normal is different. And so if people can understand that early on, it sort of relax, you know, you can relax into who you are by noticing that we all do things differently, really. And I think that from a physical standpoint, this idea of being able to appreciate our bodies for what they do and not necessarily what they look like is a really important distinction to make as well, and one that's being hopefully being talked about more now, that instead of, you know, perceiving ourselves as this ornament and appearance being such an important part, we have to recognize all of the things that we can do, and that those are some things to be able to say to kids early on, to this notion of how we give our children feedback, how we praise them. If we can begin to praise for what your body does, or what a great game you just played, or what a excellent goal you made, as opposed to you're so pretty or you're so handsome, it's the language that we're using and it's the things that we're noticing in our children that they take on those messages, right? So by being able to highlight activity as opposed to appearance for appearance sake, that gives them a very different way of looking at themselves.
That's really interesting, because actually most people, when they like look at small children, they will comment on their appearance, like how pretty or how handsome the baby is, how cute. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be our default setting. So I guess changing the language around that can be like a powerful thing, and especially as when it's repeated so much.
Mm-hmm. Because again, if that's all that's repeated to you, then that's how you begin to see yourself only. Okay, mm-hmm. Now again, I will say that the pendulum has swung perhaps too much the other side, but appearance is okay. It's okay to notice beauty. We live in an environment where we have so many beautiful things to look at and to be appreciative. So I'll never say that appearance doesn't matter, but it matters in relation to also what lies beneath and who we are as individuals, not one without the other, but they don't have to be so mutually exclusive. And again, to be able to praise a child for what you see in them as beauty is important too, but not to the exclusion of all the other elements of who they are as young children.
I think it's such a good point that you just made. We seem to always in society swing from one extreme to the other. So I guess it's not about not mentioning physical appearance at all. It's about trying to have that kind of middle ground. But I suppose it all comes down to like us as parents. You know, if what we're kind of constantly thinking about is kind of physical appearance, then that's going to translate. But actually, if we ourselves start to shift our own mindset, then that will translate into what we teach our kids. So I guess it really all is with us, ultimately.
It is with us. And it's about, you know, there's so much buzz around mindfulness. Really, mindfulness is another word for awareness. It's another word for being mindful about how we look at things and how we feel about things, and stopping sometimes before we go into automatic pilot and just say, oh, he's so cute, oh, she's so pretty, to actually be thoughtful and pause for a moment and make a comment that, you know, could be something more than just what we see. And that's hard, because we as a society and as humans, we are conditioned to comment on appearance and to judge. I mean, there's a statistic, right? Within 3 seconds of walking into a room, people are judging all they see, and what they see is appearance. They don't see who you are inside. That requires time. That requires commitment to conversation. That requires a lot more than what we have, again, back to this really, really immediate culture where all we're seeing is questionable also, right? How we manage fake news, how we take all that stuff in is something that is done very differently when it's done in person.
So I guess maybe this is why people call it mindful meditation practice, because as you say, it's so ingrained within us. And it's just about trying over time to kind of change our mindsets. And I guess it all comes back down to awareness. So it's being honest with ourselves and how we're doing things and noticing it and trying to change that gradually over time. And if we can do that within ourselves, then that's going to translate and provide a great foundation for our kids.
Mm-hmm. And the act of meditation, to sit with yourself, isn't about getting rid of the thoughts, right? I think that's what happens where people are like, but I can't get rid of them. They're constant. I can't meditate because all I do is I'm thinking all the time. That's what our brains are programmed to do. That's normal. What the meditation practice is about being aware of those thoughts and letting them go so that they can swing by and you can get back to this sort of, you know, I don't want to even use the word blank screen, but almost sky, you know, where there's nothing else. And then you notice something passing by, another thought, to-do list, picking up dry cleaning, whatever it is, and then letting that go. So with the object, again, it's not to have thoughts, it's not to have feelings. It's to be able to see them as just part of who we are and to not have to cling on to something so badly, but to be able to accept it as part of who we are.
I think that's such a good point, because this is something that I got wrong for ages. Was like, you know, you have this image of a, you know, Buddhist monk in Tibet and you think, oh, they've just got zero thoughts. And I was like, I can never achieve that. But actually, if you reframe it into the way you're saying, then that's what kind of mindful meditation really is. I personally, since I've switched that mindset, I've found it so much easier. And I guess, again, it comes back to what you've been saying throughout this. It's about awareness of yourself, and it really, really starts with that. So would you say that it's a good thing to do to start with maybe some guided mindful meditations? If you're, how would you approach it from a kind of really practical perspective?
When you say it, are you talking about meditating?
Yes.
Okay, so I think, and again, meditation, what I love about this idea of, you know, modern meditation is really, we can be doing it anywhere, anytime. It's, again, just pausing and being aware of what it is we're doing. So you don't have to be sitting with your feet crossed and your hands in, you know, I don't mean, what do you call it, but that position. You don't have to be doing that. You just have to get out of autopilot and get into a more mindful, into a more aware state of being. That's really what it is. So that can be anything from washing dishes to, you know, cleaning up after your little one, to not always be doing something.
Distracting,
mm-hmm. but also to not always be doing something with the mindset of doing the next thing. It's about really being and doing whatever it is you're doing, being in the moment of that, so that you're engaging in that activity and you're not thinking about the shopping list and the planning. And it's so hard because we are living that way. It's what our modern world is forcing us into doing. And, you know, short of going off and all living, you know, in a Buddhist monastery, that's not what we're doing. We're living in a very, very challenging, pressured life. So how do we adapt to that as best we can? We try to just not do too much, I think, all at once. This notion of multitasking, and I can do 17 things at once. Even people have said to me so many times, oh, the podcasts are great because I can do 12 things whilst I'm listening. It's true, right?
Guilty of doing that as well.
I know, me too, guilty of doing it. And there's something to be said about it. At least we're listening. But the other thing is, what would it be like just to sit down on the couch and listen only without doing those four other things? Mm-hmm. It's an experiment. You can try it.
Taking the pressure off, which is also one of the key things. Well, thank you so much, Holly. This has been so fascinating. We'll put a link up to your paper up on the site. And thank you so much for your time and insight.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope it was an interesting conversation for people to listen to.
Definitely. Take care.
Bye.